In spite of all the research and education outlets, there remain many mysteries regarding autism. This is especially important here in New Jersey since the rate of autism is significantly higher than the national average. The continued existence of these autism mysteries call for more effort and forces supporting the work to find the much sought-after answers. And that call has been responded to in a variety of ways with the passage of several laws recently in New Jersey, one of which, by the way, will make it as easy as possible for you to support the work regarding autism research, patient services, education, information. Here to discuss all this and what it means for the autism community is the Executive Director of Autism New Jersey, Suzanne Buchanan. Thank you for being here today, Suzanne.
Thank you for inviting me.
And this is the website for autism resources, education programs, and much more than that in New Jersey. It's autismnj.org. It's autismnj.org. And Suzanne, when I referred in the introduction about the autism rate in New Jersey being more significantly higher than the national average, how much higher versus the national average in comparison is the rate in New Jersey?
Well, it's interesting because I'd like to give a little bit of background information on those numbers before
sure.
I answer that question. The rate does seem higher in New Jersey and some other states, but when we look at how the researchers conducted the study, we see some different prevalence rates when researchers use different methods. And so in New Jersey and some of the other higher states, they used very intensive methods, and they looked at both education records and health records, whereas some of the other states were only able to look at health records. So some of the rise in autism, or the increase above other states, is an artifact of the scientific methodology. That said, New Jersey clinicians are doing a fantastic job identifying which children meet criteria for autism spectrum disorder and linking them to services. So that's the good news to the prevalence numbers.
Always think back, because a lot of people, when you say autism, they think of a child who is silent and shut down for all intents and purposes. I always think back to, I don't know if you or the listener right now remembers the TV show Saint Elsewhere, where, and this is spoiler alert, I'm going to tell you how the series ended, but you probably know it because it was over a decade ago. There was a crazy script all through the show, and all of a sudden there's an exterior shot of the hospital, which had been the setting for the TV show, and it starts shaking, and it turns out the entire series was in the imagination of an autistic child's mind that created everything that the viewer had seen for all those years on the TV show. But as far as an autistic or a child in the autistic spectrum disorder, is it always a child who is silent and shut down? Or, not saying this in a negative way, but when you hear a child screaming in the supermarket, could that also be the result of the impact of autism?
Oh, absolutely. Children and adults with autism are just as individual as you and I and everyone else. They have their own personalities, preferences, needs, abilities. And one of the things that we learned from the prevalence work that we just talked about was that now on the autism spectrum, about half of children with autism have average or above average intelligence. So this means that they are verbal, but they still have significant social challenges. So really, there's a saying in the autism community, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism.
Yes.
So, you really need to meet that individual and understand what makes them tick and not just assume that you know who they are because of their diagnosis.
What do you say to the person who dismisses when a child lashes out in anger, which is one of the things that autism is a catalyst for, and they dismiss the autism diagnosis and say, now the kid just needs to get punched and have the computer taken away?
Oh, gosh, that would be pretty extreme. So, we see all behavior as a way to communicate, right? And I think that's probably true for all of us. When we're expressing frustration, some of us do it in adaptive ways, and some of us do it in ways that challenge other people and are not in our own best interest. So we see behavior as a form of communication, and then we try to understand what the child or adult is trying to communicate, and we try to help them meet their needs in more adaptive ways.
We're talking with Suzanne Buchanan, who's the Executive Director of Autism New Jersey. On the web, it's autismnj.org, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. And I mentioned, too, we're going to get into some of the recent laws passed that are going to help and empower the cause in the education process. But with with autism and its causes, that's got to be the biggest challenge as far as both in research as well as in patient care and programs. Without knowing the true source, and it can be the variables, as you say, if you met one, you've met one, whether it's organic, whether it's environmental, whether it's genetic, just how much of that mystery just adds weight to the challenge of knowing what to do for that individual, because there is no textbook to say, okay, this is the one way you treat all children, all adults with autism. That just cannot exist.
Right. Well, I think the questions about the cause weigh heavily on all of us, obviously more so on parents as they look back through their own history, whether it's their family history or, you know, things that the mother did while she was pregnant. Of course, that weighs very heavy emotionally because there are so many different hypotheses out there. But from a treatment standpoint, actually the issue is a little bit clearer in that because we don't have a medical cause or a medical treatment identified right now, we're looking at the behaviors. We're looking at what is the child doing too much of, what is the child not doing enough of compared to typical peers, and what are the skills that this child needs to be able to, you know, perform well in school and get along with friends in the neighborhood and get along with their brothers and sisters and follow parents' basic instructions. And like, what are the skills that they need to learn? And so that becomes a very clear path to understanding what their current skills are and teaching, you know, systematically teaching new skills and then trying, as I said earlier, to help them reduce their challenging behavior by understanding what they're trying to communicate with that. So the treatment at this point, the gold standard treatment, is applied behavior analysis, or ABA, and ABA has done wonders for so many children with autism. Some have even been considered behaviorally recovered as a result of early and intensive intervention, and you know their future is so much brighter because of ABA.
How fine is the line between treating an autistic child in a way that creates a comfort zone from them, but still avoids limiting them? I don't know if that's the right way, or preventing them from advancing and growing.
Sure. I think, you know, you always have a few considerations. Number one is the individual child and their family. What are their preferences, desires, you know, goals for the child? And you have to make sure that you're engaging the child, right? Treatment isn't something that's done to the child necessarily. We're trying to work with the child. And so the other thing we're thinking about is what types of opportunities could result if the child had this new skill, or what types of opportunities won't the child have if they don't learn this skill. So it's all geared towards the child's best interest in a very individualized and engaging manner.
Now, I mentioned back in the introduction that a few bills have become laws in support of the research and programs for autism, and one of specifically I mentioned involves you listening, because when you do your taxes, it can be painful, but this is something that could add a little pleasure and a little brightness to the lives of others. It's called the Autism Programs Fund, which Governor Christie recently signed into law. Talk about what this program is going to permit the person listening right now to do in next year's tax filing season.
So when they're completing their tax returns, they can make a voluntary contribution directly to an autism program fund. And then the state, through the Department of Health and the Governor's Council on Medical Research and Treatment, will then come up with a systematic way to seek out grants and disseminate those funds. So, and as you said, those funds are specifically for current programs and innovative and new programs to help them get off the ground.
Right. This isn't going to be money that all of a sudden is going to come with an announcement. Oh, we're going to shift this money to the general fund. God help the politician that ever tries to do that, by the way, because their ears will not be ringing. They'll probably be bleeding by the time the public gets done. So, yeah, these are specifically targeted funds that are going to go to autism programs, education, and research. And if I understand right, too, anything that new that comes up in advances in research or programs, whether it be from your organization or others, you could go to the State Department of Health and say, we've got this idea, can this be included under that umbrella from the Autism Programs Fund?
Absolutely. Anyone, you know, with ideas or existing programs that they want to fund or expand can certainly call the Department of Health. It's very early in the process for them to figure out the regulations and the policies, you know, surrounding the infrastructure on this. So I would recommend or offer to anyone, they can call us, they can call me directly at 800-4-AUTISM. and we can keep a list and liaison with the department on their behalf.
Oh, Suzanne Buchanan, who is the Executive Director of Autism New Jersey, their website, autismnj.org, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. Another bill that made its way through the legislature, it was A-2786 in the Assembly, S-1474 in the Senate, requires teacher preparation program for instructional certificate to include certain amount of instruction or clinical experience in special education, and for students with disabilities endorsement to include credit hours in the autism spectrum disorder. How important, how big of an advance is that to make this a mandate now?
Oh, it's tremendous. I mean, as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, with the increase in the prevalence of autism and the greater identification of children with intellectual abilities who can do well in general education settings, it's critically important that general education teachers and special education teachers become more knowledgeable, not just about autism and some of the symptoms or how it will manifest in a classroom, but more importantly, evidence-based practices, effective ways to teach children with autism in regular and special education settings. So that was something that we worked with the sponsors, with Senator Ruiz and Assemblyman Benson, on including, and we're very grateful for their support and specification of evidence-based practices.
So would this mandate allow more kids in the autism spectrum disorder to stay in the regular classes as opposed to going to special ed classes, since the teachers would be mandated to be trained?
Sure. I think you're right on track with that. I mean, the more effective the teachers are, the better the students will fare, and the more appropriate behavior they'll have and the less inappropriate behavior they'll have, right? So they will fare better in these classrooms. That's exactly the idea behind it. It's a long-term approach.
You mentioned the 800 number that you have, and talk about how the many purposes that number serves you as well as the autism community here in New Jersey. What does that number give them access to?
Oh, sure. 800-4-AUTISM gives parents and professionals access to referrals, individualized advocacy, and just an opportunity to connect with us to be part of our collective voice on behalf of the entire community. Our website, as you mentioned, autismnj.org, has a lot of information about how to access and navigate state services. We realize that it's never as easy as reading something on a website and, waving a magic wand and making it happen. So that 800-4-AUTISM is here for parents and professionals every step of the way as they navigate the challenges of autism.
And certainly the number on the website, they're conduits for a family with an autistic child, because common sense can be really quickly smothered with immediate needs. And a lot of times I can imagine, especially with a fresh diagnosis, that family feels like they're alone. They're on an island because of what's happening right now. And when they make contact through the website and the phone number, 1-800-4-AUTISM, it helps them probably quickly realize in those initial stages that they're not alone. They're people who are walking and have walked that path with them.
Exactly. That's exactly what we hear from families. And we also have opportunities for families and professionals to come together throughout the year. We have a transition conference focused on adolescents and young adults on May 1st in Woodbridge, and we have our annual conference down in Atlantic City October 19th and 20th, and that last year was attended by almost 1,300 people. So it really is an actual community, and it's a wonderful opportunity to meet with like-minded people and learn how to better help your children and students.
And there's always more information about those events that Suzanne just mentioned, autismnj.org. Real fast, just want to wrap up with something here, because what could be a plus could be perceived as a negative. We're really sensitive to invasion of privacies and government intrusion, or whatever the case may be. There exists the Autism Registry through the New Jersey Department of Health that was created back in 2007. What is its purpose, and what is one of the biggest misconceptions about it in your mind?
Sure. Well, the purposes are twofold. The first purpose is to be able to link individuals and families to services, and that's one of the services that the registry provides. The second purpose is to better understand the number of people with autism here in New Jersey for public policy planning purposes, and that's something we work with the Department of Health on practically on a daily basis. So probably one of the greatest myths, maybe that children or the parents can opt children out of it. Parents can have their child's information not be included, so they can work with the child's diagnostician to not have identifying information included. But, children do need to be counted, and their diagnosticians need to record that.
So for you listening, if autism is part of the day-to-day life that you are being called on to exist with, or if you know someone, have family members who are having to deal with autism, and especially if this is something, a new situation in New Jersey, Autism NJ is the resource through their website, autismnj.org, and their free telephone line, 1-800-4-AUTISM, because we have those links over to our website, more information as well. Find out more about their events, find out how you can support the work of Autism NJ. It's also found at autismnj.org. We've been joined by their executive director, Suzanne Buchanan. Suzanne, thank you so much for the work that you do for the autism spectrum disorder community in New Jersey. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for the opportunity.